Today, I'll be joined by Noah Rubin. We are back. It's been a few weeks, maybe a couple of months. I lose track of time. We're taking a look at free agency, the first two and a bit days. Not much has happened today. So mainly the first 2 days, having a look at all the player movement, the fantasy news. This is Fantasy Basketball International. This is Balls Deep. Welcome to the Balls Deep podcast, part of the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam King. At AdamKing91 on Twitter is where you will find me. Joining me is Noah Rubin, at NoahRubin22. Noah, welcome back, I guess. As I said, it's been a little while. You've been rolling out your shows. Hopefully people have been tuning in, but I was getting bored. Not really much to talk about, so thought we'd have a show and get going talking about free agency. How have you been?
King, yeah, I've been good. You've mentioned a lot of shows. I have been keeping up with that, but it's good to be back on the Balls Deep podcast. It's a different change of pace. It is more new intro music, which is a lot of fun. I think this is probably like the fourth new intro song. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I don't know. I always get bored with things. So we'll have some new graphics and possibly different intro music for every show. I'm not sure yet. Anyway, we'll see. But I like that song. It's one of my favorite songs. So I just thought we'd use that as an intro because it puts me in a good mood. As I said, we're just going to talk about free agency and what has gone down. I'm just going to bring up my screen here. So this is anyone that follows me on Twitter will have seen this is my NBA free agency tracker that I've done over at Roto Baller. So haven't included the moves that have happened in the last sort of 5-6 hours, but there hasn't been much. So basically what I've got here is all the meaningful moves starting at the bottom or from the first early moves. We'll just cover the ones. I mean, I'll work through all of them, but we'll only discuss the ones that are fantasy relevant. It's not going to be all of them. A good example of that, Royce O'Neal, who re-signed with Phoenix for 4 years, $44 million. A good piece in terms of real life, but in terms of fantasy value, not a ton here. Any thoughts on Royce before we move to the next player?
My only thought, and I'm quickly just double-checking his exact age as I'm saying this, is that it's kind of surprising that a veteran like Royce O'Neal is getting a four-year deal. I mean, if you look at some of the deals right above him on your sheet, they're all younger guys. But Royce O'Neal, he's 31, so I guess that's not that old, but I feel like once players tend to get past 30, they're getting 1 or 2 year deals. So interesting to see them lock him up for 4 years. But I mean, it's not a ton of money, especially in today's NBA with today's cap. So yeah, no real fantasy impact here, but just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it is. I guess it's a fairly friendly deal, though. $11 million a year is tradable. So if it gets to a point where they want to offload him to someone who's looking for a sort of a glue guy, then that makes sense. The next one, a little bit more questionable, I suppose. Patrick Williams re-signing with the Bulls for 5 years, $90 million. I don't know. Can you explain this one? I mean, to me, he hasn't really done anything. I know there's defensive upside there. He has had some injuries which have impacted his playing time and production, that sort of thing. But is this a good deal, or is this the Bulls just overpaying to get anyone on their roster?
I think it's fine. I don't think it's it's probably an overpay based on what he has shown, but I think you are locking him up with the idea that he's going to get better. They still believe in him, clearly based on the deal. It's not nearly as much as other players from his class have gotten. I mean, if you just look at it, it's 5 years, $90 million, that's $18 million a year. Obi Toppin right above him, that's 15 million a year. So it's not too much more money than what Obi Toppin got per year. So it's, and I don't, were they actually the same class? I don't remember if they, I don't think they were the same. No, they were the same draft class. Okay, they were definitely the same draft class. But it's the idea of Patrick Williams. Hopefully he'll continue to develop. You know, if they're trading DeMar, if they're trying to get off Zach LaVine, they're trying to trade Lonzo Ball based on reports, we'll see Patrick Williams take on a larger role. He hasn't really ever been the focal point or the number two on offense throughout his career yet. Hopefully, given that opportunity, he will develop how they imagined he would. So I also think this is less than a guy like DeAndre Hunter, who probably showed a little bit more through his first few years. I'll double check that now that I've said that, but I don't think it's that much money considering what he has shown and considering the upside is definitely still there.
Yeah, and fantasy perspective, I guess wait and see. I think the Bulls will still make a few moves before they're done. So if he's starting, maybe he can have some fantasy value this season. He had moments last season, so I don't know. Someone to watch, but not a priority yet. Same sort of goes for Obi Toppin, who you mentioned. Nice pickup for the Pacers. I thought he was a really good fit last season with their up-tempo style. So I think this is a warranted contract. Again, he'll have moments of fantasy value throughout the season, but not someone that I'd be drafting at the moment. Max Christie, much the same. Has a probably a little bit more of an unknown. He sort of flashed potential and he's a little bit younger. But the Lakers obviously see something there to lock him up for 4 years. So $8 million a year, pretty friendly contract again. So he's someone that I'd be watching just to see what his role looks like in LA next year. We don't really have clarity on that yet.
If I may interrupt really quickly, Kingy, I did double check. Hunter was 4 years, $90 million versus 5 years, $9 million. So same amount of money, 1 year less. But we did just have a Woj bomb-ish. Jonathan Isaac just re-signed with the Magic, 5 years, $84 million. That's live breaking news. Do we want to talk about that really quickly just because it's fresh?
Yeah, look, I mean, let's talk. I mean, there's a few Magic guys on this list. So if we want to start with Isaac, and then we've also got Mo Wagner. He signed on for 2 years earlier today. Gary Harris late yesterday signed for 2 years. Goga Badadze signed yesterday for 2 years. So they're basically running it back with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope coming in to the starting lineup, moving Gary Harris to the bench. So it appears that they're happy to run with who they've got and continue the trajectory that we saw this year.
Yeah, and I mean, why wouldn't they? I mean, obviously there's always room for improvement for teams, but you're talking about a team that was just a 5 seed, pushed the Cavs to 7 games in their first playoff action, led by guys that are very, very young. So they like, cool, let's add in a veteran that has been there. You know, we have a little bit of cap space extra because a lot of our guys are young. We don't have to pay them yet. Let's give KCP 3 years, $66 million. He'll bring championship pedigree and floor spacing. He's obviously still a really good defender, but the floor spacing, I think, was the main thing that they were looking for here, just because they really didn't have much shooting, which was an issue when they got to the playoffs and couldn't score because there was no spacing. As far as Isaac specifically, I think it is, you know, them now feeling confident that he is going to be healthy, or at least healthier than he has been, because I don't think you give a player a 5-year deal unless you're really confident that they're going to be contributing a lot. Sure, it's probably more team friendly than what his talent would be had he been healthy, just because he's one of the best defensive players in the league and can still contribute on the offensive end. So excited to see them, you know, have him around for another half a decade at only $84 million. So we'll see how much better he can get and how much he can stay on the floor.
Yeah, it's the question always with Isaac is playing time. Like, are they going to be comfortable enough running him out there for meaningful, significant minutes, so 20, 22, 24, or are they sort of going to stay in those mid to high teens? Because we know what he can do, and Yeah, I don't know. I like what the Magic are doing. I still worry about the center spot for them. I know they have locked up three centers, but I'm not sure any of them are a center that can take you to that next level. Wendell Carter is obviously the one that they're running with as the starter, but he seems to have plateaued over the last couple of years. They all sort of bring different elements to the table, defensively, offensively, spreading the floor. They can all do bits and pieces, but they don't really have that one center that you can just leave out there for 32 minutes every night. So that's probably their weak point, but based on the fact they've re-signed both Goga and Mo Wagner and Wendell's there, they're probably not in the market for a center, it wouldn't appear.
Probably not this summer, unless they want to make some sort of trade. I think it is interesting because, like, they have depth at center. It's just that everybody feels like a depth center. Like you said, Wendell Carter is probably the starter, but what he showed last year wasn't necessarily that's a guy we wanted starting at center. I mean, when they started in the playoffs, they started with Jonathan Isaac at center, and obviously they moved back to Wendell because that ended up being more effective. They were able to get some wins in that series, but do they feel confident with Wendell Carter as the starting center of the future to help build around Paolo and Franz Wagner? I don't know. I probably don't based on what happened last year. So hopefully he can either bounce back, or it wouldn't be shocking if they're, you know, looking at making deals for a center at the trade deadline, especially if they're able to be even better than they were last year.
Question from Kyle Chad TTV. What's up, boys? Am I the only one who gets Timothy Mozgov terrible contract vibes from the Hartenstein signing, especially when compared to the steal of a deal the Bulls got with Jalen Smith? So, I mean, let's look at both players there. Start with Hartenstein, which I've got him here somewhere. I mean, I know what he signed. It was 3 years, $87 million. Mm-hmm. From memory, yep. Moving to OKC. I don't know. What do you think of this? Like, is he, I mean, we're still not even sure what his role is going to be. Is he going to start alongside Chet, or are they going to bring him off the bench behind Chet? I would assume they're at least going to try starting him and see what it looks like. It might depend a little bit on the opponent. So if you're up against someone like a Minnesota who have two bigs or are running a bigger lineup, you probably start Hartenstein. And then a team like the Warriors, potentially, maybe you start Chet. So I don't know. What are you thinking here with the Hartenstein deal?
I know it's starter level money with him getting, but it's, so it's a backloaded contract. So year one, he'll make $30.5 million. By the third year, it'll be $27.5 million. So not a dramatic change, but it's a backloaded contract, probably with the idea that, hey, in his last year will be the first year of Chet Holmgren and Jalen Williams on new contracts. So, and then he'll be an unrestricted free agent the year after that. I'm not a cap expert, but it seems like, based off that and some of the other contracts they have, because right now the contracts that they have going into like that year, which is the 2026-2027 season, the final year of Hartenstein's contract, they have SGA on the books. Lou Dort, his contract would be $17 million that year, but it might be gone. If I'm not mistaken, that's a team option for that year, so that might not even be there. Isaiah Joe and Aaron Wiggins are under contract now because they just re-signed them, 12 and 9, so it's not a big deal. Kendrick Williams will be at $7 million that year on a team option. Kaysom Wallace will be there. So it's like Jalen Williams, how much is he going to be getting paid? Chet Holmgren, how much is he going to be getting paid? That are really the factors there. But if they have to move Hartenstein by that point, they shouldn't have too many issues, I wouldn't think, especially if they're able to package some of these younger guys. But I think it's just taking advantage of the fact that this guy fills a big need for them in the sense that, you know, Chet Holmgren's a really good defensive center, but he's skinnier. Like, this is just a big body center that played really well for the Knicks last year. So let's get him on the roster. I would imagine he's coming off the bench and he spends time on the floor with Chet, especially in those matchups that you mentioned, like against like the Nuggets when Jokic is out there. Okay, let's get Hartenstein on Jokic. Chet is able to be in a little bit more of a help position and get some blocks. Like, that works. But I don't think Hartenstein is an everyday starter. I think he's a guy that's getting 20 to 25 minutes. But it's just the fact that OKC has so many good players still on rookie deals that makes this kind of weird.
Mm. Yeah, look, I don't mind it. I guess comparing it to Mozgov, it's a concern. But I'm personally not too worried. I've been relatively high on Hartenstein for a couple of years. So I wasn't surprised to see what he did last season. He's not coming into OKC to score. So they're not expecting him to come in and be this high-volume scorer or anything like that. They needed rebounding. He's a good rebounder. He's a very good offensive rebounder. Defensively, he's fine. He's not great, but they've got, as you said, they've got Chet there who is potentially an elite rim protector. So, and I also think Hartenstein can be a pretty good offensive hub. I think they can run the offense through him a little bit. We've seen him do that in the past. So I don't mind it here. I'm not too worried about it. Look, 25 minutes a night, he can be a top 100 player as long as you don't need points. I guess on the other side of the question here, Jalen Smith to the Bulls for 3 years. What are your thoughts there? Drummond is going back to Philly to play behind Joel Embiid, or if and when Embiid is injured, he'll probably be the starter. Jalen Smith, 3 years, $27 million. To the Bulls to play backup center behind Vooch. What are your thoughts around this contract? Is this a better contract based on what we've seen from both Hartenstein and Jalen Smith?
I don't want to necessarily say better because, like, value-wise, Hartenstein, this is probably an overpay, but it's just because the Thunder had the flexibility to overpay because, like, the Knicks had offered him, I believe what I saw was 4 for $72 million. This is 3 for $87 million. So obviously it's a good bit more money. And that's why he left New York with a chance to win a title in order to go out West, make more money and also have a chance to win a title. So that was probably what it's going to take to get him away from New York, because the money was going to be considerably better. That's what happened with Jalen Smith. He's a guy that is going to probably fill out the backup center role. I mean, probably 15 to 20 minutes a game and spend some time at power forward, maybe in certain lineups. It could end up being a value play if he ends up working out really well. Maybe Chicago fully embraced the rebuild and trades Vooch, and then Jalen Smith steps into starter minutes at times. But I think it's just a swing here. The fact they were able to get a guy that was a former top 10 pick on a $9 million a year contract. I think it's a fine move for a team that should be shifting towards a rebuild. So it makes more sense for them. I wouldn't say it's, like, in my mind, a considerably just better deal.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think this will be a good opportunity for Jalen Smith. I mean, is he a center? That's another question. Like, right. I would probably think he's more of a four, but he's athletic enough to play at the center spot. We saw that last season in patches. So, yeah, look, I like both contracts, despite the fact that the price, there's obviously a $60 million difference. But as you said, the Thunder have the money. They want to win now. They needed that. I mean, I think from what I've heard over the last few days, they were maybe the worst team in terms of rebounding numbers last season, or at least one of the worst teams. So they had a clear need to be filled. And Hartenstein fills that need. So it makes sense for them. So I like both deals. For different reasons. Hopefully it doesn't turn into the Mozgov situation, because we don't want that for the Thunder or for Hartenstein. All right, let's go back.
Yeah, the Thunder were bottom. They were 27th in defensive rebounding percentage and 28th in both offensive rebounding and regular, just general rebounding percentage. So, yeah, it's the only teams that were worse were, like, Washington, Charlotte. So, yeah. It's not ideal.
No, you want to compete, which they do, that you need to sort of make improvements in that area. So, all right, who else can we talk about? All right, Chris Paul heading to the Spurs on a friendly enough contract, $11 million, despite obviously his age is a concern, injuries are a concern. from a reality standpoint, from a fantasy standpoint, I love this move. I think it helps Victor Wembanyama. I think it helps just the organization. He's basically a coach on the floor. So someone that can help these young players. I think it'll help Devin Vassell as well. I think they signed Castle, yeah, Stephon Castle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, helps him. Whether he ends up being their point guard, I'm not sure, but long-term. But no, I really like this. And from a fantasy perspective, I think it's good for Chris Paul's fantasy value this season. What are your thoughts on the Paul move?
Yeah, obviously he just had the worst season of his career in Golden State in a very different role than pretty much anything he's ever had. So I'm assuming he's going to get back to being a starter. I don't think that they would start Trey Jones or Stephon Castle point guard over him. No. I think it hurts Stephon Castle short term. I mean, I think he's going to grow a lot learning from Chris Paul playing behind him / alongside him. But the idea of him stepping in and potentially starting a point guard as a rookie is now just non-existent. There was a chance and now it's just not going to happen. But Chris Paul played 58 games last year, played 59 games the year before. He's 39. Like, he'll be 40. It might be after the season. I don't know exactly when his birthday is, but he's obviously got a really good chance to have at least a few nagging injuries along like the course of the season where he's missing time. So that'll probably be an issue. But when he's on the floor, I'm expecting him to get back to being like, I don't know, I want to be safe and say top 75, but maybe top 50 production, just off the sense that he's not going to turn the ball over. He's going to get assists. He's going to somehow get steals, and he's just going to get more minutes than he did with the Warriors last season. So, yeah, no, I definitely like it for him. I like it for the Spurs as a team. It'll be interesting to – like, having Chris Paul and Greg Popovich investing into, you know, a guy like Victor Wembanyama, like, that's exciting for the future. I hope Victor Wembanyama doesn't start flopping just because Chris Paul told him he should. But that's my only concern here. But everything else, no, it seems like it's going to be great.
Yeah, let's hope that doesn't
happen. Start just doing rip-throughs and yelling at the ref. It's going to be fun.
And look, I've got Chris Paul's numbers here. You're right, 58 games last season. Per game, he was still a top 100 player. And as you said, it was arguably the worst season of his career. He averaged, 9.2 points, almost 4 rebounds, almost 7 assists, a little bit over a steal a game, 44% from the field, 1.33. I mean, there's no reason he can't get up to 12 points a game. I mean, that's not asking too much. 12 points, 8.5 assists. He'll still be sort of 1 to 1.5 steals, 1 to 1.5 threes. His percentages could come up 45, 46. So there's a pretty clear path to him pushing back inside the top 75, as you said, top 50 best case scenario. But I do think they manage him back to backs, like down the stretch, that sort of thing. So I wouldn't expect him to play more than probably 60 games again.
Right.
Which obviously impacts his overall total value. But, yeah, I still think he'll be a nice target in sort of the eighth round, ninth round, if you can get him. Those assists are hard to come by. One of the more curious moves, and this was, I mean, it's still a bit curious, is Jonas Valanciunas going to the Wizards on what appears to be a really friendly contract, 3 years for $30 million. He's not the same player he was 3-4 years ago, but I think he can still contribute. But does this, to me, this probably indicates he's coming in to play alongside Alex Saar. And we were sort of the opinion that Saar would come in and be the starting center because they didn't really have anyone. But they've since re-signed Rashawn Holmes. They still have Marvin Bagley. They now have Valanciunas and Saar. You're the sort of the rookie draft expert here. Is Saar going to play at the four alongside Valanciunas?
Yes, the rumors before the draft of why he at least partially didn't want to be in Atlanta, the rumored reason why his team didn't want him in Atlanta is so that he could play power forward, because the Hawks have Jalen Johnson and they have DeAndre Hunter at the three. So it like wasn't really going to make sense for Jalen Johnson's not a small forward. They could have made it work if the talent made sense, but Jalen Johnson's a power forward, so Sar would have been competing for minutes at center. So apparently they wanted him in Washington where he could play power forward. And to me, I was like, I guess, but you're going to a team that has nobody at center and they have Kyle Kuzma. Sure, they're probably going to trade Kuzma. I think that's, you know, is probably already going to happen. Mm-hmm. But they could play him at center, and it just made sense for him to play center. But now it makes a little bit more sense for him to play power forward if they trade Kuzma. Wouldn't be very surprised if Kyle Kuzma was with Washington to start next season, because that would be a pretty interesting lineup. They would either have Kuz at the three, maybe Sar off the bench. Who knows exactly what that's going to look like. We'll have to see how more moves play out. But I guess the Valanciunas money was a little bit surprising to me. Just 3 years, $30 million. I expected maybe a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think he starts at center from day one. So we'll see. Yep. Maybe they disagree, but I would imagine he's starting at the five with Sar at the four.
Yeah, and as you said, to me, that would indicate that Kuzma is probably on the move at some point, whether that's to start the season or throughout the season. But, yeah, it was an interesting one. Mason Plumlee, we don't need to talk about him. He'll play backup behind Jusuf Nurkić. If and when Nurkić is out, you pick up Plumlee and roll with him for a week. But other than that, no value. a couple of interesting ones. So the Mavericks were pretty vocal about the fact that they were prioritizing Derek Jones as someone they wanted to hold on to, and they weren't able to do that. So he ended up going to the Clippers, 3 years, $30 million, and they brought in Najee Marshall, I guess, as his replacement, 3 years, $27 million. That's sort of weird to me. Like, it's basically the same contract. So why wouldn't Derek Jones, like, he left for $1 million a year? To me, I don't know. It was just weird. I think part of that is maybe Derek Jones didn't want to be in Dallas for whatever reason, given he didn't take a significant pay increase to go elsewhere. But in terms of fantasy real life, both of these moves, I mean, we'll start with Najee Marshall, who will come in to Dallas and was potentially going to start, but that's maybe Klay Thompson now, who we'll talk about in a second. But, I mean, for me, no real fantasy value here for Najee, despite the move.
Yeah, it'll just be the same as it was in New Orleans. If he's got some injuries in front of him, like PJ Washington's out, Najee Marshall starting, sure, that's a little bit enticing. He's a better shooter than Derek Jones Jr. I don't think he's quite as good of a perimeter defender, but still a very, like, a good, competent defender. Like, just a guy that him just being on the floor, he'll produce some stats. Not going to be great, but a little bit of fantasy value there when somebody in front of him is out. Maybe he'll be the guy that starts if Klay or PJ Washington misses a game, and like whether it's a three or the four. Or maybe if Kyrie or Luka misses a game, they just kind of slide everybody up and Najee Marshall just starts no matter who misses a game, one through four. But that's as a reserve, I don't really see him having a ton of fantasy value.
No, I think you'll have a role, but it won't be significant enough to warrant fantasy attention. Derek Jones comes into LA, I guess, theoretically as the replacement for Paul George. Significant downgrade offensively. Obviously, going from Paul George to Derek Jones, you're losing a lot on that end of the floor. Defensively, I guess he's a different kind of defender, but certainly I think comparable to Paul George on the defensive end. Plenty of length, able to defend multiple positions. I don't mind it for the Clippers, but yeah, for me, they're a team that's, if you look at the West as a whole, a couple of teams have taken some steps forward or at least sort of stuck with what they've got. The Clippers are probably downgraded a little bit. So, I mean, if they're putting a lot of eggs in the baskets of Kawhi Leonard and James Harden here, both of whom have injury history, Kawhi especially. So, I mean, if Kawhi comes out and gets injured early in the season and misses significant time, are the Clippers at risk of missing the playoffs or being a play-in team after what they were able to do last season?
Yeah, it's weird with the Clippers because I feel like a lot of times if a player, Paul George's caliber, you know, either a franchise player or like the number two franchise player just leaves, then the teams try to adjust. And it just feels like the Clippers can't because they don't have their own picks. So are they going to try and run this thing back with James Harden and Kawhi Leonard and potentially still be in the lottery? Like, I think it's a very real possibility. I think they were the 4 seed last year and then lost first round to Dallas. I can't see them being better than, you know, a lot of the teams that were below them in the standings if they're just taking Paul George and replacing him with Derrick Jones Jr., with all respect to Derrick Jones Jr. I just don't see the Clippers being a threat in this stacked Western Conference that is just only getting better every single year. Yeah, I mean, they don't really have a choice other than to try and run it back or try and make a trade to get their picks, but I don't see that really happening.
And transition, seamlessly transition into Paul George, who finds himself now in Philly playing with Tyrese Maxey, who re-signed, and Joel Embiid. And what are your thoughts here? Obviously, George is coming in to play alongside two really talented offensive players in Embiid and Maxey. I guess we're calling them a big three, and typically someone has to take a step back. I don't think it's Embiid because it's still his team. I don't think it's Maxey because his trajectory is pointed upward. Paul George is 34. Is this sort of the season where we see Paul George take a bit of a hit to his value? He was a first rounder last season on per game value. I think from memory he was 11. Yep. So 11th in per game, 9 cap value. Is this the season we sort of see him maybe drop to the third round? Or can he maintain some elite value despite playing alongside these guys?
I think it'll still be, it might be second or third round, but I think it'll just be a different kind of value. Like he averaged 22.6 points. Maybe that drops closer to 20. But I think, you know, maybe the efficiency goes up. He shot 47% this past season, shot just under 46 the year before that and 42 the year before that. So maybe he's able to be a third option and see his field goal percentage go up a little bit. I know what Stephen A. Smith said about Paul George not being a catch-and-shoot player, but he can be a catch-and-shoot player. And a very, very good catch and shoot player. So filling in almost like a 3-and-D role with some more shot creation when he wants, with Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid really kind of taking on most of the offensive load. I could see Paul George doing that and still being elite in fantasy, but it's just being slightly different production. Like the assists were down last year. I would assume it kind of stays around 3 per game, but he's still going to be very, very good. I don't really see any of those three taking a dramatic hit because he's in the mix. I just think the value is going to change. So if you're drafting Paul George, just kind of, I guess, understand that.
Yeah, and I do think part of this was potentially to take some of that offensive pressure off Joel Embiid. He's probably, I mean, I've talked about this to anyone that would listen. I'm not really touching him in drafts next season. He's just going to go too high for me. I don't think he plays more than 50 games. So there are going to be a lot of instances where Paul George could be option A or B with Embiid out. So, yeah, I still think he maintains that value, but I think part of this is to take some of the load off Embiid. So he averaged 34.7 points per game last season. I don't really think that they want him to score that much. I don't think the pressure and the offensive responsibility, as much as obviously he can do it, they'd rather him be closer to 30 points. Maybe Maxey holds and Paul George comes in and picks up that third scoring option. So, look, Philly are all in. Obviously, they want to win. They need to win now. Paul George's window, despite it's a 4-year contract, but really, the window is probably 2 years here. All right, we'll start to wrap things up so we can get out of here. Tobias Harris to Detroit. I don't know. I like it for Detroit. I think it brings in a sort of a proven veteran. He's got a history with Detroit, obviously. They're a very young team. They're not in win now mode at all, but having Tobias Harris there on the floor just gives them some leadership and a bit of a calming influence. He seems to me like a pretty chilled out, calm player who can help these young guys. And to me, it would indicate that the Isaiah Stewart at power forward experiment is done, and he will be the backup behind Jalen Duren, which I think he is. Despite being undersized, I think he's a better center than a power forward. Is that what you think is going to happen here with Tobias starting at the four?
Yeah, that's exactly what I think is Tobias Harris is now the starting power forward for Detroit, provides them with some spacing, which has kind of been an issue. So that should help Cade Cunningham's development. But, you know, it's a two-year deal. They're not planning on him being part of their long-term future, part of their core or anything like that. They just want a guy that's going to help them not be embarrassing, which has kind of been what they've been the past 2 years. So Tobias Harris will help that. Any jokes about him, you know, not showing up in the playoffs, don't worry. The Pistons are not worried about the playoffs at this point. Hopefully by the end of his two-year deal, they'll be ready for the playoffs, and then they can let him walk and figure out something else. But no, this is going to be a good thing. Should make JB Bickerstaff's first year with the team a little bit easier. That way it's not just all young guys. There are some proven veterans.
Yeah, I like it. Well, I first saw it and I thought, why the hell would you want to go to Detroit? But it makes sense. It makes sense, I think, for him. And it's a nice payday for him as well, $26 million. And he's certainly on the back end of his career as well. So, all right. Well, Clay, we didn't really discuss Clay too much. So let's finish up with Clay Thompson. 3 years, $50 million to Dallas. We knew this was coming, or we were fairly certain this move was coming. Dallas was always in the discussion there. Orlando were there. Philly were there. There were a few other teams. But ultimately, he will join Kyrie and Luka in Dallas. I would assume starting. I think that would have been a significant part of any discussions he was having, is that he wanted to start. He felt he could be a starter and contribute. Offensively, I think this is a great move for Dallas. It does give them a reliable third scoring option. That was probably their very good defensive team, but relying on two players basically to score 50 to 60 points a night. So gives them a third scoring option. My concern, as I said, is that he's starting alongside two guys that are guards. They're definitely guards. They can't play at the forward spot on the wing. So Clay Thompson is going to be the small forward, which puts him out on the wing defending a little bit. And that's my concern, is his lateral movement looks to be very limited, which is not surprising given his age and the injuries that he suffered. They do have Gafford and Lively protecting the rim, so two very good rim protectors. I guess, what are your thoughts here from a Dallas perspective, getting Clay in? Is this a good move?
I mean, it's definitely good, especially on the offensive end. I think, you know, Clay has been playing in a system where he's doing a lot of movement and getting a lot of open looks and then still knocking down very tough looks. He's been doing it throughout his career. I think it'll be a little different in Dallas. He'll be getting open looks just off of Luka Doncic creating them, but that's not something I'm very concerned about. I think it's one thing to go from, I'm a really good shooter, just sitting in the corner, sitting on the wing and getting catch and shoot looks. I can knock them down, and transitioning to being a pin down screen shooter and doing a lot of movement shooting. So it's different, but it's not, I'm not concerned about him going from movement shooting to just catch and shoot. Those are easier shots. So that'll be great offensively, more space for Luka Doncic and Kyrie to operate, which, I mean, they already do enough without any space to operate. So should be good offensively. Defensively, you're right. I agree, like, it is a little bit concerning because Clay isn't the defender that he once was, and neither Luka or Kyrie is known for their defense. I would imagine that you know, Gafford and PJ Washington, assuming they're starting, or Lively and PJ Washington, that they'll be having to do a lot defensively. PJ Washington will probably be picking up the opposing team's best wing scorer every night, and then Clay would probably get whoever else is there. I think the defensive rotations will be interesting for Jason Kidd to kind of figure out every game, but the offense is going to be a lot of fun. And Dallas was excellent in defense throughout the playoffs. So, I mean, hopefully losing Derek Jones Jr. won't just throw that all away, but I think it'll be good.
No, and they also lost Josh Green, which is sort of probably a little bit more of an underrated loss. So he goes to Charlotte. Yeah, obviously he wasn't playing huge minutes, but he is a solid defensive player there as well. So they are losing a bit defensively. So it'll be interesting to see if they try to grab someone on the cheap who can defend on the wing. Last player I wanted to talk about is De'Anthony Melton, who is going to the Warriors on a one-year deal. To me, this potentially indicates that there's a bit of concern about this back injury that he had last year. The fact that they've only picked him up for 1 year, and $13 million, so it's a fairly friendly contract. This is a sort of a let's get him in. We know what he can do. We know he's a very good player. He's going to play backup, I think. I think he won't start. I think Pods will start alongside Steph. I'm not sure about that, but I'm assuming they're bringing Melton in to play sixth man. And from a fantasy perspective, I think he's probably draftable. I think he'll play mid-20s, worth a look at the back end of your draft. We know that he can put up fantasy value when he plays minutes. What are your thoughts here on I guess, A, his role, and then B, how that translates to fantasy?
Yeah, I think you mentioned it being a one-year deal. Whether the Warriors are concerned about it or just everyone was kind of concerned about it, this is kind of a prove-it year. Hey, I'm healthy and I'm good to go. You guys have seen what kind of impact I can make when I'm healthy, and I can still do that. That's what this is for De'Anthony Melton. And then if he does play well and is able to play a lot of games, he'll probably get paid more next summer. As far as starting or coming off the bench, I kind of imagine he would start, but it wouldn't be surprising if Steve Kerr changed it every other week and we just kind of saw, like, he kind of rides the hot hand. So whether Melton is coming off the bench and playing 20 to 25 minutes per game or starting and playing 25 to 30, both him and Pajemski will play enough for them to contribute in fantasy. So, I mean, he's a guy that can hit threes, get some assists, block shots, get steals. Like, De'Anthony Melton is very good for fantasy. Now he just needs minutes, and I think this is a great landing spot for him to prove that he's healthy and can still contribute.
Yeah, we talked about this on the I was on the Insight Fantasy Sports show last night. We very similar show. We talked about free agency and talked about Melton, and I likened him to, I mean, we know who he is and what his role typically is, but I sort of likened him to, if we think back 2 years, to what Bruce Brown was doing in Denver. And Al Horford a little bit is another guy that sort of very like different in terms of positionally, but the concept that he will typically step in to a starting role if any of the other starters are injured. So that they will, so if Steph goes out, he'll come in and play some point guard. If Draymond Green is out, they'll shuffle things around, move him in, he can play a bit of forward. So although he you're probably drafting him with the, or sort of under the premise that, okay, he's probably going to play 25 minutes, 24 minutes a night, by the end of the season, it wouldn't be surprising to have to look at his numbers and he's actually averaged 27 or 28 because he's started so many games due to a range of injuries. So, yeah, look, I like him as a back-end target. I think he can still have value. I'm going to throw this one up here. This is more for you. Well, yeah, to some degree. Anyway, it's a Pistons question. Is Fontecchio still the sixth man over Tim Hardaway? And does the Harris signing kill any shot at viable minutes for Bobby Klintman, who was a pre-draft favorite? That's definitely a you question.
Oh man. I'll answer the second part first. I don't know how many minutes Bobby Clinton was going to get as a rookie. I think end of the year, okay, Detroit is, you know, leading the lottery because they're just so much worse than everybody. Like that scenario, then yes, obviously he's going to play a lot of minutes during silly season. Early on, I'm not as excited about that opportunity. I just don't think it happens. And then yes, Tobias Harris coming in makes that even more difficult for him to get minutes. As far as who his sixth man is, I'm not entirely sure yet. I think that both Fontecchio and Tim Hardaway Jr. will have a role. I don't know who would be the primary guy. It might just be a hot hand situation, but they'll also be trying to figure out minutes for Ron Holland, who they just drafted fifth overall. So, that's under the assumption that the starting lineup is Cade, Jaden Ivey, and Asar Thompson alongside Tobias Harris, Jalen Duren. But they have a lot of young guys that have to get minutes on top of Fontecchio and Tim Hardaway. So we'll see what JB Bickerstaff prefers.
Yeah. I mean, is Holland going to start over Ivy? I mean, that's a question. I mean, I don't think so, but I mean, we saw last season, they weren't super high on Ivy, but that may have been more of a Monty Williams thing than a Detroit thing. There's a lot of unknowns, I think, in Detroit. I mean, Tim Hardaway Jr. wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't want to be there and so would push for a trade or something at some point to get out of there. A lot of unknowns in Detroit, I think, at the moment, as there are with a lot of teams. I mean, we're still months out from the season, so Obviously everything we're saying could change based on more player movement, that sort of thing. We're almost at 50 minutes, so I'm going to let you get out of here. Tank Me Later, as I said, that you've been rolling out the episodes. What have you got sort of on the horizon for your show?
Yeah, I'm probably tomorrow going to record an episode just going through my initial rookie rankings and talking about, you know, things that have happened that could alter what those guys' situations look like year one and just why I had players ranked where they were. Rankings are weird for me. I probably change my opinion every single day, so I'm not going to just roll out new rankings every single day. I'm just going to say, hey, I'd probably be a little lower on this guy than I was right after the draft. But talking about that. And then I'm also, I know you're hosting the 30-team Dynasty mock. I'm also currently hosting a rookie mock with some other Dynasty analysts. And once we get done with that, I'll probably do a show or maybe an article. We'll see, recapping that. And then I'm sure we'll do at least one show talking about that Dynasty mock, assuming it finishes before the season starts.
It's going to be a long one. We'll do some breakdowns. Obviously you people that follow, you know, you're over at Roto World NBC as well. What's sort of on the agenda over there in this, I guess, somewhat downtime, although we do have Summer League starting this weekend. So what's happening over at NBC?
A lot of news blurbs breaking down free agency. I think Zach Hanshew has done a column or two on free agency as well. When Summer League starts, we'll have blurbs and columns for that. And then I think it's almost time for us to start working on our draft guide for next year. So that'll be a lot of fun. And I'm also still doing a weekly WNBA schedule breakdown. Those come out on Monday, whatever time I get done with it. Generally before the games start, but check those out. It's very basic. It is just breaking down the schedule and a couple of key headlines, but WNBA content. So if you're playing fantasy, check that out. Hopefully it's a little bit helpful.
Yep. Go and check out Noah at Noah Rubin 22. He's been out and about over the last couple of months doing his show. You've been on Dan Vesperus's show twice, I think.
Twice.
So out and about. I'll probably aim to, we'll might start up a weekly show again, because as I said, we will have some Summer League to talk about over the next few weeks, as well as the Dynasty stuff that we're doing. And then it'll be preseason, and then we're getting into next fantasy season. So we'll try and roll out a weekly show, as well as all of my other stuff that I've got on the horizon, which is still under the rug a little bit. We're working on things, but there'll be plenty of content starting, including the analyst interviews. I'll be doing series 2 of those. I've got about 15 of those to record in the next month. So I'm going to be busy doing those, but they'll come out as well. So be sure to, as I said, follow Noah, follow me at AdamKing91, at FBI Basketball is our umbrella account, I suppose. Check us out on YouTube. Check us out on Spotify. We're everywhere. Thumbs up, like, subscribe, all of that stuff. It helps us. It helps build our brand. Noah, thank you for coming on. I need to bring up our outro because it's been so long since I've done this. We will catch you next week. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.